This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality, where we discuss various topics and then bring you back to reality. I'm your humble host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio today, we have with us my main man, Brother Ja'far. Assalamu alaikum to you, brother.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. We go way back. And we have Sister Zainab. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Zainab.
Alaikum assalam.
Where are you from?
I'm from Indian Administrative Kashmir.
So, artificial intelligence. What do you think about it? What are your initial thoughts? Is artificial intelligence a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Science fiction movies have become almost a reality now. If you noticed, I don't know if you saw it, but the Japanese have actually made a robot, a cyborg, which it looks real. It looks like a real human being. Its facial expressions are almost lifelike. If you see it, it's really freaky. What are your thoughts on that? Is this going to help humanity?
You could use something like that in situations where it's tougher for humans to, I guess, work or help. Say, suppose like an oil rig. You could have these humanoid cyborgs work over there, get the job done. And suppose if something happens, well, the cyborg gets destroyed, right? A human's life isn't at cost. Or suppose even now, like with the whole condition of COVID and people being like sanctioned off into their own little sections in the hospital, you could have a cyborg go in and check all the necessary, suppose, temperatures and testings, and they won't contract the disease because, again, they're not human, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're metal on the inside,
yeah.
Right? So in those cases, I think there's a positive like leap towards going towards the science fiction like reality.
Yeah.
But then again, like every science fiction movie shows that they turn on us at the end.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of hardwired into our psyche from a young age that, you know, robots are eventually going to turn against humanity. Sister Zainab, what are your initial thoughts on this?
I agree with Brother Ja'far that everything has a positive side and a dark side. And all these movies, when we see them using AI systems, be that in robotic form or any other form, we see both the positive side, how much they help humanity and how much they serve humanity. At the end of the day, if the program gets uncontrolled, how this system dominates human beings, and that's where it gets dangerous. I, as a human being, really don't like an artificial intelligence to be dominating us. Mm. So, yes, dominating human beings is a bad part of it, but yes, when it serves you, if you, like the brother said, if you have a robotic nurse and that serves so many people in a very less amount of time, it will save time. But at the same time, if something gets, any of the programs gets, you know, rearranged, or if there happens something in the programming and it gets out of control, then it becomes mess for a human being.
The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he's talked about artificial intelligence, and he said that, you know, we need to work on artificial intelligence. And he's actually, you know, pushed and urged the people to actually invest time, energy and effort into increasing our awareness and ability to create our own artificial intelligence. Here we go. We'll be right back.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
So herein lies an issue with the artificial intelligence, the AI, which exists in today's world, and that is that it's not necessarily in the hands of responsible people.
Yeah.
In fact, the people like Boston Dynamics, I don't know if you've seen that robot dog.
Mm.
You know, that was a long, long time ago. A robot dog, and they have like a robot horse as well. It's much bigger. It can run. It can open doors. They actually had one of these on the streets trying to enforce COVID restrictions and stuff. Already, yeah, it's happening, right? Welcome to the future. But the point is, as the sister pointed out, if there's even a slight glitch in these systems, it's going to completely harm humanity. It's not going to have that good effect.
It's even more difficult in this time because everything is becoming digitalized. You have more hackers. You have different ways of getting into a system now, right? So if you rely solely on this and you make, suppose, obviously it's going to be a program for these, like, cyborgs and humanoids. But again, if someone can crack that system, then it's done.
It's
right?
going to be disastrous.
Of course.
Has it not already been disastrous?
As you pointed out yourself, it's not been in the responsible hands, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we as human beings, we have so many selfish people. We have so many people who are after power, who are after domination, because they need power. The basic thing is they need power. So in order to get to that power, they, you know, misuse out of this artificial intelligence systems. And, you know, Facebook CEO himself, recently I was going through an article, he himself admits the fact that artificial intelligence in future is not going to be very good for the human beings because it's going to have, this already has, like we have, you know, we have our phones, smartphones right now, but we are not at the same time safe. It has so much of information, whatever we do, wherever we sleep, whatever we do, like from waking up to sleeping, it has everything recorded, whether it's on, whether it's off. So even Elon Musk used that. Why he uses that, you know, a kind of chip on his camera, laptop camera, but be it on or off, why he's doing that. So they know. These are the, you know, some masters of the tech world. They know how much harmful it can be if it's not in the right hands.
Being
in right hands is very, very important. Even if leader of Islamic Revolution is suggesting that to create more AI system tech, you know, promote it. He trusts his nation. He knows the nation is quite responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if the same tech gets into the irresponsible hands,
and it is in the irresponsible hands, right?
It is already in
and
the,
they've been collecting data on the way humans think and the way that we as
and now, like, you
think.
Know, whatever the application you right now you download in your phone, it asks you.
And
at the end of the day, do I have access to your gallery? To
and
your
I
audience?
Never read it. Terms and conditions, like I never read that stuff. I
so
just
many
accept.
People, no, of us, we don't read, and we don't have any choice. Mm. We are left with no choice. It's at the same time asking you, and at the same time leaving you with no choice. If you do not accept those conditions,
you can't
the app
use
is
the
not going to work.
Yeah. No, but see, even look at, suppose like an example like YouTube, right? You could be talking about a certain topic, and then an hour later, you could be scrolling through YouTube, and that same topic would come out through someone
Man,
else.
And they have
right?
completely...
They're listening to everything. It's not that, you know, you're on your own. You're not on your own anymore.
I mean, I used to think they just do this for advertisement purposes. You know, they're just trying to see what kind of products is this person interested in. Like, I don't get it, though. If that was the case, why would they keep offering me, like, really weird things, like, I don't know, things that have nothing to do with me. A car insurance. I don't have a car, you know. But it's worse than that. The algorithms of Google, generally, you know, of Facebook, definitely, YouTube, definitely, all of these main key players.
Social media.
But Google itself, like, if you get two different people to search for something, they'll get different results according to themselves. This is not fair because it means that everybody
they
is
are
being
into your
divided.
Personal life.
Yeah.
Means
well,
they
yeah,
are into your
the,
personal life. They know what you like or dislike.
Yeah, it's in the fine print for most of these services. The second you start them, they're already scanning you from that moment, right? The second you search something, they pinpoint like what things you enjoy, what things you like to see, and they give you responses depending on that.
Yeah.
Right? So obviously no two humans are alike, hence two searches will never be alike.
And according to me, this is one of the worst human right abuses.
It is, absolutely. Because they're hiding the truth a lot of the time. They are telling you what the information is. You type in definitions of names, Google will give you the answer. We're speaking about, is artificial intelligence a bad thing? Is it a good thing?
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Before your time, Sayyid Jafar, right, there was a thing called MSN Messenger. Do you remember MSN Messenger?
That was in my time.
Before
it's
Facebook
from new
and
generation.
All this. Don't even try it, okay? You are Generation Z.
Oh, it was the little happy face at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, do you remember ever talking to, like, a robot? You never remember that? So there was this craze going around where you could actually talk to an AI. And, you know, you'd send them a message and they'd give you a reply. And then, and all the kids were doing it. It was so much fun. It was like, wow, it's not a real person and you're talking to it. And whatever you say, they give an appropriate response. Like, if you say, are you real?
Oh, it's like the little paperclip guy for Microsoft Word back in the day.
You're just trying to prove that you're in my generation, okay?
How old are you?
The guy's like in his...
I'm the bridge between these two. Oh, I know both sides now.
All right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true to an extent. But do you remember anything like this? The fake human beings out there who you can talk to. And Facebook actually, there was a whole story about how they created lots of fake personalities that don't actually exist.
I don't remember about that, but I remember talking to some AI system while I wanted to search about my brother-in-law. He's suffering from cancer, and I wanted to search about what to do, what foods he should eat, what foods he should avoid and all, and I was talking to some AI system, and yes, it was responding.
And then we have what's it called, the Amazon lady thing, that little machine.
Alexa.
Hi, Alexa. And then it goes, hello. I don't have one. And there's other versions as well, but you ask it anything and it will give you a response. It's like having a friend in your house. Now, they are acclimatizing people to have such things in their houses. You guys seen a movie called iRobot?
No, I have not.
Okay, so it's just basically another sci-fi flick where they're basically showing that everybody buys these robots and keeps them in their houses, and they're really useful. They help you in case your house is on fire, or if you need to go to hospital, or if you need some medicine. They're like slaves that you can
adding
just...
Adding headache to parents.
Yeah, so they called it iRobot. You know, like the new iPhone? We all have smartphones. Now you get iRobots, which are basically like your own personal slaves. That sounds really cool. I really do want that. Is that bad?
That's really bad.
I would still want it.
Look, you would want it to help you get more things done. But at the end of the day, what ends up happening is no one gets anything done. And you're so reliant on that supposed machine or intelligence to do it for you, you don't know how to do it yourself. Look at kids nowadays. They can't get from one place to another. They need Google Maps. When you put a child right now in front of a group of people, they don't know how to talk to them because they're so accustomed to talking through an interface, talking through some intelligence. They're at a loss of words when you bring them out into a social environment, right? Something that's not behind a phone screen or a computer screen.
We lose being a life of a human being. We'll be more into the intelligence world if we, you know, get those, if we have those. The worst part is that they are not emotional at all. So they don't understand your emotions. And if they get emotional, that will be worst again. I saw one of the movies, it was rather Indian movie. I was showed that at the end of the day, he puts an emotion into this robot who is his slave kind of thing. And at the end of the day, he proposes his own wife for his own fiance. And he gets into trouble that, oh my God, what happened? Okay, yeah. I was not supposed to add emotions to him. So, yes, they kind of are good when they serve you, I suggest you don't get that.
So there's pros and cons. Okay, there definitely are pros and cons. And the thing is, most of the times where we have discussed such topics, it's been through science fiction. You know, like the movie that Sister said, like the other movies. We've all explored these themes and asked these questions through science fiction. It's fiction. It's not real.
Apart from why only movies, apart from fiction, we saw this in real life as well. Like, when I go through the news that you see this video was leaked about this personality, this video was leaked about that personality. We as humans, everyone has a great aim. Everyone wants to go reach some goal. And when you know everything is getting recorded, everything, you are being monitored each and every second. You have no secrecy at all right now, and that's not fair at all. So that way, you are not sure tomorrow what maybe Allah will hide, because he is, you know, we say that he hides things. He knows all secrets though, but he does not, you know. We say in Dua-i Kumail as well, all my bad things, you know, you just, you know, keep them hidden. But this artificial intelligence reveals everything. We see everything getting revealed in the news, this day, that day, and we see these personalities who reached, who became star, who took so many years to achieve something, they come down just in a few minutes.
Sister Zainab, Sayyid Jafar, thank you very much for being on the show. That's all we have time for, unfortunately. Dear listeners, we hope that you enjoyed and benefited from the show. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Rabb, لدي أمة رايزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رايزك لتصي دليلتك وانسك
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Heavy hits and intense rhythm are immaculately employed here to play an epic melody that tries to induce an image of a hero in the minds of listeners. The image of General Qasem Soleimani. This symphony orchestra is performed in commemoration of the second anniversary of the assassination of former commander of IRGC's Quds Force, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
Tonight's event was an effort to use the beautiful medium of music to describe the character of a legend who is General Soleimani. Art is a universal language and it can easily connect to different nations.
Qasem Soleimani had many characteristics. To understand those features, we need different media and music can better reflect his epic aspect. The aspect that made him risk his life to make our region a safer place to live. So tonight, artists try to play their part in paying him tribute and admire his great character.
The orchestra was performed by the IRIB Symphony Orchestra, which is affiliated to Iran's national television. The pieces were conducted under the baton of Arash Amini, who believes music speaks stronger than words.
The music pieces that were performed tonight have the capacity to be played in different countries. It's music, and music can be understood by anyone, no matter where they come from. So I think it's the best way to acquaint the world with the personality of General Soleimani.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for the fight against terrorism in the region. He's hailed for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. This earned him the title of a national hero in Iran. The country is set to hold nationwide commemoration ceremonies on the second anniversary of his assassination, slated for January 3rd, 2022.
There have been many events in the past days in Iran that tried to highlight the importance of General Soleimani's role in Iran and the region. These tunes try to communicate the same messages, except they use a more powerful language that needs no translation, the universal language of music. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Israel captured Syria's Golan Heights in the closing stages of the regime's 1967 war on Arab nations and annexed the occupied territory in 1981 in a move that was not recognized by the international community. The UN Security Council, in its resolution 497, adopted unanimously in December 1981, declared the Israeli decision null and void and without international legal effect. Nonetheless, former US President Donald Trump granted US recognition to Israel's sovereignty over the Syrian territory in 2019. The administration of current President Joe Biden, which remains critical of its predecessor for its unilateral approaches, has not taken any move to reverse the decision. Amid the U.S. blind support, the Israeli premier unveiled a plan on Sunday to double the regime's settler population in the occupied Golan Heights from the current 25,000 with a multi-million dollar plan. The land is rich in water sources. Naftali Bennett said the move has been prompted by the Trump administration's recognition of Israeli sovereignty over the Golan and the Biden administration's indication that it will not soon challenge that decision. Syria has reacted to Israel's decision to expand the number of Jewish settlers in the occupied Golan Heights, calling it a dangerous and unprecedented escalation and a war crime.
Israel continues with its settlement policy and systematic violations, which are war crimes. The Golan Heights is an integral part of Syrian soil, and we will work to return it in full to the homeland by any means permitted by international law.
In the light of the U.S. backing, Israel has also been expanding its settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, which are illegal under international law. Palestinians believe the U.S. brokered normalization deals between Israel and some Arab states have emboldened the regime to press ahead with its expansionist agenda and land grab policies. But such expansionist policies are just the tip of the iceberg, as acts of violence by Israeli forces and settlers have intensified against Palestinians in the West Bank. That alongside frequent shelling and air raids against the besieged Gaza Strip. The international community has stopped short of taking any practical action in the face of Israel's seizure of Syria's Golan Heights, the occupation of the West Bank, and atrocities against Palestinians as a whole. Israel's aggressive policies will not change the truth that the Golan remains part of Syria, but its fresh expansionist move will create further tensions in a region that has been paying the price of Tel Aviv's destabilization activities.
The United States has approved its biggest defense spending bill in history, allocating $778 billion for the fiscal year 2022. President Joe Biden signed the National Defense Authorization Act into law on Monday following Congress approval. The proposed defense spending is up about 5% compared to the previous year. However, the surprising part of the story is that Congress has allocated about $25 billion more for the military than the Biden administration had requested for. The budget allocates over $740 billion to the Pentagon, while nearly $28 billion would go to the nuclear weapons program. A good portion will be spent on hypersonic weapons and other advanced weaponry, raising the fear of another arms race with Russia. It ensures that the U.S. gives around $3.8 billion to Israel as part of its annual military aid to the regime. But around $7 billion of the hefty defense budget is for what the U.S. calls the Pacific Deterrence Initiative, a plan to strengthen America's presence in the Indo-Pacific region against China. That also means an open call for support for Taiwan, which China regards as its own territory. The budget also envisages $300 million in military aid for Ukraine, which has been a source of tensions between Russia and the U.S.-led Western military alliance, NATO. Many experts believe that Washington's claim of defending Taiwan or Ukraine are just pretexts to make the U.S. military-industrial complex more profitable.
The military industry, military-industrial complex in the States, it really controls the economy. This idea that America's trying to defend Taiwan or Ukraine, these are just pretexts for the profits of the military-industrial complex.
According to data released by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute in April, the massive U.S. military budget was by far the largest in the world in 2021. That was more than the budget of 11 other developed and developing countries combined. That despite the fact that COVID-19 forced many countries, such as South Korea and Russia, to shift part of their planned military spending to pandemic response. Critics argue that the unwarranted increase in defense budget could instead be diverted to address more urgent domestic priorities, such as social injustice or fighting against the pandemic. The critics also say that the budget is more than enough to vaccinate everyone in the world. In July, an anti-war group, Code Pink, warned that the proposed $25 billion hike in the Pentagon budget alone could end homelessness in the United States. The group accused lawmakers of trying to increase the profits of military contractors than meeting the needs of working class. The approved military spending bill also represents a bump from former President Donald Trump's last budget of $740 billion, which was then criticized by Biden's fellow Democrats. Upon entering the White House in January, President Biden had pledged a massive overhaul of U.S. strategy toward the world to make it a better place. However, Biden continues to follow Trump's aggressive and warmongering policies, as the National Defense Authorization Act reflects that billions of dollars will go for the U.S. unending wars across the globe.
Hundreds of people demonstrated in Gaza City in solidarity with female Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails. Protesters marched towards the Legislative Council building while shouting slogans against Israel and expressing their unwavering support for the prisoners. In recent weeks, Israeli forces increased their attacks against Palestinian female prisoners. The issue of female Palestinian prisoners is highly emotive to all Palestinians. The protest was organized by the Al-Ahrar movement.
Palestinian female prisoners are being attacked inside Israeli prisons, and we will not remain silent. Attacking female prisoners is an attack on the honor of all Palestinians, Arabs, and Muslims. They were beaten and their ribs were broken by the prison guards. We stand by the prisoners and we will spare no effort to secure their release from Zionist jails.
Palestinians believe that Israel can only be forced into releasing Palestinian inmates under prisoner swap deals. In late 2011, Hamas and the Israeli regime signed a prisoner swap deal under which Israeli soldier Gal Shalit was released in exchange for over 1,000 Palestinian prisoners.
The Zionist enemy must understand that the issue of Palestinian female prisoners is a red line that must not be crossed at any given time. Attacking and humiliating Palestinian female prisoners will not go unpunished. The Israeli regime will have to face all the consequences of attacking the female prisoners. As we stand here today, we say to all Palestinian prisoners that the resistance factions will always support them and that we will soon liberate them from Zionist jails.
Palestinian prisoners, including females, are kept in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers and are being subjected to torture and psychological pressures by Israeli prison authorities.
The Zionist regime is trying to commit genocide against Palestinian prisoners amid the silence and normalization of Arab regimes. We call on all Muslims to stand by Palestinian prisoners because Palestinian prisoners are fighting for a just cause. We have also sent a strong warning to the Zionist enemy over the issue of female Palestinian prisoners.
According to legal experts, the Israeli regime has long regarded itself above international laws and norms due to the protection it enjoys from some countries like the United States.
People here are demanding international action to support Palestinian prisoners' struggle for freedom. Israel currently incarcerates some 5,000 Palestinian prisoners, including scores of women and children. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
The Saudi war on Yemen has been ongoing for more than 7 years now. Far from home, Yemeni students in Iran gathered in Tehran to commemorate the victims of the war.
We Yemeni students have gathered here today to once again shed light on Saudi Arabia's crimes in our country. Saudi Arabia is bombarding innocent children and women in our country. Why is the UN keeping mum? Where is the Human Rights Watch? Aren't we considered human?
Saudi Arabia launched the war on Yemen in March 2015 with the goal of bringing former Yemeni President Abdurrabbuh Mansour Hadi back to power. The Yemeni army and its allied forces are leading the anti-Saudi resistance in the country. They say while Saudi Arabia is enjoying all-out support from its Western allies in its war, Yemeni forces have made headways against the invaders, turning the devastating war into a costly quagmire for Riyadh.
Saudi Arabia has failed to achieve its goals in our country. We have resisted for more than 7 years and shifted the balance in our favor. Despite the use of American and British arms, Riyadh will never be able to impose its will on our nation.
The ongoing bombardment of civilian facilities has left tens of thousands of Yemenis dead and destroyed the infrastructure of the impoverished country. Not to mention the spread of infectious diseases and famine, Saudi Arabia has also imposed an all-out blockade against Yemen.
The Saudi war on Yemen is condemned here as a crime against humanity, a crime that continues to be ignored by the responsible entities in the world. Yemeni students here say this means it's up to the Yemeni people to take the matter into their own hands and continue their resistance until the country is finally free. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
With France's presidential election just 4 months away, Europe's largest Muslim community is being scapegoated and targeted by government repression as badly as ever. Almost 100 mosques have recently been raided by the government, with at least two dozen shut down so far. Earlier this year, a so-called anti-separatist law was accused of basically legalizing Islamophobia, as it tried to ban the hijab for minors and force the closure of not just mosques, but highly respected Muslim NGOs such as the Collective Against French Islamophobia. The latest assault on freedom of religion for French Muslims has been sharply criticized by foreign leaders and top NGOs.
France is a republic which claims to be very attached to the idea that the state must be neutral towards all religions. But the past year has seen an incredibly tough interference and meddling in the Muslim community. They're entering mosques and telling religious leaders to say this and to not say that. And this reflects the shift to the extreme right of President Emmanuel Macron's government.
The dominant theme of France's entire presidential election has shifted to the extreme right, as convicted racist Eric Zemmour has provided coronavirus-era France with almost nightly Islamophobic diatribes. Zemmour has rocketed to third place in the polls, giving Macron and other candidates license to blame Muslims for France's economic and political problems.
Zemmour resembles Donald Trump of the United States in that both thrive on outrage, but there are significant differences. Zemmour's entire career has been based around trying to be a part of the political scene and conversation, and he has benefited from support from major parts of the French establishment the entire time.
Il est invité dans tous les plateaux.
Zemmour is invited onto all the television news programs, even though he's a political pyromaniac who is trying to rehabilitate the era of Vichy France, when France collaborated with the German Nazis. He's very dangerous for all of France, and not just France's Muslims, because he's appealing to those who sympathize with the era of French colonial barbarism.
Ever since the Great Recession began, France's political and media elite have stigmatized Muslims to a degree which has gutted the nation's claim to be a global leader in freedom of religion, thought, and speech. The three most popular candidates in the presidential election all seem to be trying to outdo each other in Islamophobia, which has France's Muslims expecting the state-sponsored racism to be even worse over the next 4 months. Amin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iran's lead delegate to the Vienna talks says the eighth round of negotiations aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action will be focusing on the two issues of verification and guarantees.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has announced that if an agreement is reached, the side that violated the deal, meaning the U.S., should remove the sanctions first. Iran should verify the removal of sanctions and only then take measures within the framework of the JCPOA.
Ali Bagheri-Kani says the U.S., which withdrew from the JCPOA in 2018 under the administration of Donald Trump, also needs to provide guarantees it will not withdraw again or impose sanctions in violation of the deal.
Iran's rightful and logical demand has been getting guarantees from the other side, and this, as well as the issue of verification, have in principle been accepted by them. But discussions need to take place on the mechanism, frameworks and criteria involved in order to reach a framework for an agreement.
Bagheri said the sides are set to discuss banking and financial sanctions in the coming days. Meanwhile, EU coordinator Enrique Mora says the talks need to end within a reasonable period of time, which, according to him, should be a matter of weeks rather than months. Mora said difficult political decisions need to be made, both in Tehran and Washington. Iran says if the other side shows it's ready to effectively remove sanctions and give the necessary guarantees, the talks can conclude successfully. Talks will continue at the level of experts and deputy foreign ministers in the coming days as efforts intensify to make the challenging prospect of a restored JCPOA a reality. Homolezki, Vienna.
A meeting was held here in Western Kabul to bring the Islamic Emirate and the people closer together. The meeting was organized by a Shia association to pave the way for national solidarity in Afghanistan. During the meeting, the religious leaders and the Taliban officials stressed the need for mutual trust between people and the government.
One of the main responsibilities of the ruling group is nation building. Afghan nation is mainly composed of our Shia and Sunni brothers. We are part of United Ummah of Islam. In order to have a united Afghanistan, we should trust each other and rely on mutual values. The new government needs to represent all sections and ethnicities of Afghanistan.
Conspiracy is one of US and the Soviet Union's main heritages in our country. They destroyed the soil with it. The Islamic Emirate need to find a way for creating unity in Afghanistan. We are all Muslims, and we believe in God. Anyone who lives in Afghanistan is entitled to live in peace and play their role in the reconstruction of the country.
The religious leaders warn against foreign interference in Afghanistan and stress the urgency to get united.
The only thing that our country needs is peace and unity. We should build trust and get united. We must distinguish between our friends and enemies.
After taking power in August, the Taliban leaders have repeatedly held talks with the Shia community seeking their support and allegiance. Shia Afghans support an Islamic government but believe it must be an inclusive one. They want to see people in power who make Afghanistan a safe place for all. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, at least 18 peaceful environmental protesters have been sent to prison this year, with 10 spending Christmas Day behind bars. As concerns about the climate crisis grows, activists have been jailed after blocking roads, disrupting court proceedings, and in one case, climbing on top of an aeroplane in an attempt to draw attention to the escalating emergency. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Damien Gale and Matthew Taylor. The piece is titled, At Least 18 Peaceful Environmental Protesters Jailed in UK This Year. At least 18 peaceful environmental protesters have been sent to prison this year, with 10 spending Christmas Day behind bars. As concern about the climate crisis grows, activists in Britain have been jailed after blocking roads, disrupting court proceedings, and in one case, climbing on top of an aeroplane in an attempt to draw attention to the escalating emergency. Campaigners fear their heavy-handed treatment is part of a concerted effort by the state to crack down on the right to protest. With the British government's controversial police, crime, sentencing and courts bill criticised by human rights activists as a dangerous power grab. 10 members of the environmental protest group Insulate Britain spent Christmas serving prison sentences for contempt of court, for breaching injunctions banning their roadblock protests, which demanded the proper insulation of the UK's housing stock. 7 more have suspended sentences. At least 8 other environmental activists have served prison sentences in 2021 for contempt of court actions, according to Extinction Rebellion, including live streaming from court and gluing themselves to the dock. 6 environmental activists who occupied a tunnel close to Euston Station in North London in protest against the HS2 high-speed rail link earlier this year narrowly avoided a jail sentence after charges were dismissed by a judge. The jailed Insulate Britain protesters have sent unrepentant messages from behind bars. Locked in my cell for 23 and a half hours each day, I miss my family, I miss my friends, I miss nature, said Oliver Rock, a 41-year-old who is serving a 4-month jail sentence at Her Majesty's Prison, Thameside, in southeast London. But when I think about the future we are facing, I feel a deep conviction that what we have done is right and this is the best place. In a campaign of disruptive protest that began on 13th of September, Insulate Britain activists blocked major roads in and around London, at the port of Dover in Kent, in Manchester and in Birmingham on 19 different occasions. Their tactics angered motorists and were fiercely criticised, with politicians calling the protesters selfish. The environmental activists vowed to continue until the British government agreed to a programme of insulating all Britain's drafty and energy-inefficient homes by 2030, or until they were sent to prison. The latest to be jailed was Dr. Diana Warner, a 62-year-old, a retired general practitioner from Bristol. After a spree of activism, including being found not guilty over a 2019 Extinction Rebellion action at Canary Wharf in East London, and then skipping her contempt of court trial to block a train headed for the Drax power station in North Yorkshire, Warner said she was finally sleeping well. The first thing I think about is no longer the climate and environment emergency, because I know I've done my best and can take a bit of a breather, she told The Guardian from Her Majesty's prison at Bronzefield in Ashford, in Surrey. Being in prison for climate activism seems very odd, but in such a disjointed world, it feels to me like the right place to be. Ben Taylor, a 26-year-old, is serving the longest prison sentence. He was jailed for 6 months after telling judges if they freed him, he would go out and block the highway at the earliest opportunity, and would keep doing it until the government acts. Ben Taylor said life at Tameside Prison was mostly boring. I was treated a bit rough at first, made to feel alienated, vulnerable and powerless, but I'm on a good wing now and have made a few friends. It's really not that bad for me. James Brown, the Paralympian released this month after being jailed for gluing himself to a plane in XR action in 2019, said it was important for those spending Christmas in prison to remember they had done the right thing. James Brown, who spent 10 weeks in Wandsworth Prison in London, said, "It is tough for them and their families at Christmas, but it is necessary. Most of the positive radical changes we have seen have come about because of peaceful protest and civil disobedience, and that is what we need to tackle the climate and ecological crisis. In the end, if you're not resisting, then you are complicit." Emmanuel Andrews, the policy and campaigns manager at the human rights group Liberty, said, "Protest is not a gift from the state, it's a fundamental right, and one that has been attacked for years by a government that wants to make itself untouchable. The heavy-handed treatment, both by police and the government, of protesters over the past year follows a long-term trend seen for several years from a government that has sought to threaten protesters into silence. The government and police already have extensive powers to detain and criminalize protesters, but the policing bill is an attempt to take this even further. It's an attack on the rights of everyone who has a cause they believe in, from climate activists to grieving families looking for answers and justice."
Seven barometric pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. One of the pillars of Islam and one of the most important acts of worship that a Muslim is ordered to perform is the Salah, or the prayer. Obviously, we, depending on your culture, you know it by different names: Namaz, Salah, prayer, And many other names that, if depending on your language. But it's obviously one particular act. But as we mentioned in one of our previous episodes, when a person is asked to perform a particular act of worship, that act of worship gains more meaning when a person understands exactly what that person is doing. When we understand that, for example, this act should be done in this manner and the result of it should be this, or that particular litany or that particular recitation that we are doing in that particular act of prayer means this and should result in us thinking about this. These type of things, the how and the why, give us a deeper understanding of that particular act of worship. Therefore, in this regard, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners today is a book that deals with these questions revolving around the Salah and the prayer, and tries to give the reader a better understanding of that particular act of worship. So please stay with us when we introduce the book in our next segment.
There's a reason why to Allah we pray in the morning on every day. It's a meeting. And we must not be late. If we want to have peace, we must obey and pray. There's no better feeling than when we pray on time, and we much is fine. So we must work hard and wake up before sunrise, so we can leave our homes with the blessings of Allah. It feels good to leave our homes with the blessings of Allah.
Welcome back to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. As mentioned previously, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners today is a book that involves a better understanding, or hopes to provide a better understanding of the Salah, of the Namaz, of the prayer. The book is titled A Commentary on Prayer. It is a English translation or an English rendering of the book by Sheikh Mohsin Qaraati that was titled Tafsir al-Namaz. Right, it was translated by Brother Mansoor Limba and was published by the Ahlul Bayt World Assembly in Iran. Obviously, the translation department is in Qom, where is the actual main offices are in Tehran. So the author himself writes about this book. You know, obviously, Sheikh Qaraati is well known in terms of his Tafsir al-Nur, or the Nur explanation of the Holy Quran, and other such books. He's known for, obviously, for his speeches on TV and so on and so forth, obviously all in the Persian language. But he writes about this book in the introduction, and it is worth, you know, getting a better understanding of this book in the words of the Sheikh himself. So in line with the efforts made after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in establishing the performance of Islamic prayer, the Salah, in schools, universities, military garrisons, in other public places, I, that is Sheikh Qaraati, also decided after writing the books Partuya as Asrar and Namaz, Radiance of the Secrets of Prayers. Now this book was something, was one of those books actually that we introduced early on in one of our previous episodes. This book has been introduced as well. Or other books such as Hamraba Namaz, or you know, Yeksatwa Charda Nukte Darbaraya Namaz, for example, in the company of prayer, 140 points, or, you know, about prayer. But these books are not in English, the second two. To write about a commentary on the recitals or the dhikr and the adhkar in prayer, such as the takbir, that is the recitation or the recital of Allahu Akbar at the beginning of the prayer, and the recital of Surah Fatiha and another surah, the bowing down, the ruku, and the prostration. So as we can see from this, that the author wants to provide a better understanding of this act. Yes, you are doing it, but understand why you are doing it. Get a better meaning, therefore this act will get a deeper effect on you, inshallah. So inshallah, in our next segment, we'll be reading a portion of this book for the benefit of our dear listeners. So please stay tuned.
All the earth is a place of prostration. Every field and meadow, mountain, park, city, farm, plantation. Every roadside, seaside, hillside, walkway, any place clean and green can be a place to pray. When I think of every path where I have ever trod, I laugh at all the crazy spots I stop to worship God. Remember that long car ride, driving all night so far, under the summer moon we pulled off to the side, reclining in the front seat of the car, waking to a fajr bird sound, and washing in the coin car wash we found, with the water blaster making wound do. You sprayed me and I sprayed you. We stood so drowsy in the dawn, behind the car wash, dripping on the lawn. All the earth is a place of prostration. Every field and meadow, mountain, park, city, farm, plantation. Every roadside, seaside, hillside, walkway, any place clean and green can be a place to pray. When I think of every path where I have ever trod, I laugh at all the crazy spots I thought to worship.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. The book that we have introduced in this program is titled A Commentary on Prayer by Sheikh Mohsin Qaraati, which is a translation of the book Tafsir al-Namaz, translated by Brother Mansoor Limba and published by the Ahlul Bayt World Assembly, an institution in the Islamic Republic of Iran. So the chapter that we would like to read from is titled Intention or Niyyah. The first essential element or rukn of prayer is the intention or niyyah. Intention means that we have to know what we are doing, what we are reciting, and for whom,
and for what a certain movement is made. The value of every deed lies in the intention and motive behind it, not merely in the deed itself. Thus, the quality of the actions of a person who stops on a red traffic light in order to maintain order and respect for the law is different from that of a person who carries out the same actions but out of fear of the traffic officer or of the fine that he might receive for violating traffic regulations. In all forms of worship, especially in prayer, intention occupies a special importance. In principle, what makes an action a form of worship is the divine intention behind it. If such an intention is not present, even if the outer appearance of a deed is good and proper, it will not have the value of worship. In this regard, the Holy Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, has said that verily the action is judged by the intention behind it. In the very famous tradition, innamal a'malu bin niyat. Yes, the criterion for an action to be judged materialistic or spiritual lies in the intention and motives behind it. Sincere intention. Sincere intention means that man acts for the sake of God only, and in the depth of his being, God and his pleasure are his aims, without expecting reward, gratitude, or admiration from others, the concept of riyah. The loaves of bread that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam gave to the orphans, captives, and poor on successive nights at the time of breaking fast iftar did not have much material value. But since they were given sincerely, on this account, God revealed a surah, which is Surah Insan, for the act that was done by Imam Ali alayhi salam, Bibi Zahra salam wa alayha, and their two sons, Imam al-Hassan and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to purify and to make our niyat sincere, our intentions sincere, especially in the prayer. Because when we know that when we are praying, we are facing the Lord of the worlds, and it is there where our hearts should be pure. For Allah knows what is in our hearts, so it is, you cannot fool Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, especially in the prayer. So inshallah, we hope to be with you in our next episode. Until then, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf on RIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.